What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Garage Media Junkies. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Chris Espinoza, and across from me, as always, is your real host.
We're both hosts. We're on the same level. We're not diminishing anybody, this podcast.
Aw, how sweet. But you do own it.
Yeah, in case we start making money, I get
them. I'm sentimentally equal parts host until this gets monetized.
As always, you know, it happened to Facebook, it happened to Apple. So we're putting it to that level.
You're going to Zuckerberg me?
Yeah. Welcome to the podcast. Yeah. And
it's episode 20.
Feels kind of good, actually. Oh, yeah.
So that officially means we've been doing this for about 5 months. 4 weeks a month.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's been 5 months since Hugo and I have been, I guess I can't say on the air, but besides, over the internet.
Besides my wife, that's the longest relationship I ever had with another person.
I feel so honored. I feel so honored.
Yeah. So, well, we're not going to start, being sentimental here. But five months is a lot.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I mean, I don't know. To me, it's the longest commitment that I've had to something that's just kind of superficial.
Right.
And that you know, you just do for fun. Usually something like this kind of dies out.
Indeed.
Yeah. We are at episode 20. We got 80 more to go before we can get truly sentimental.
And I may cry in 100.
I will be super surprised and shocked. I will feel so much pressure to put on a good show.
Right.
At 100.
Maybe we can bring, like, I don't know. We can do something crazy like that guy, Howard Stern. Like bring hookers or something.
Something on the show. I will write a letter to Diego Luna at that point. Several. Actually, 100 letters. Exactly 100 for our 100th show, asking him to join us.
It's on the record, Chris. So.
It is on the record. And you know what? It would be impressive to him to go back and listen to all of his little drops and references on here. That alone, that's a 2.5 year commitment I have to have on finding ways to drop his name. Which, ironically, already happened.
There you go.
Natural.
So, yeah, at that point, my wife's going to be like, oh, I want to meet him. I'm like, no, you can't.
You're going to have to lock her out.
Yep. Like, you're not coming to this podcast, girl.
You better hope he doesn't do any more good movies.
Well, it seems like after this, it may.
Because he just opened up a whole new world for him.
Yeah. Before we started podcast, like, he did a lot of shitty American movies before he...
Yeah, he did.
A lot of people doesn't realize, but he wasn't a lot of, like, the one of vampires that you say, Abundant Nights and all that crap.
But again, it's not exactly his fault. It's more of the way Hollywood is. They don't really hand out leading roles to Latin men.
You know what's kind of sad of that whole thing? It's, in the end, the Hollywood way ended up winning. Do all the shitty movies, kind of like the stereotype movies for your type of, you know, ethnicity, and then eventually you're gonna have your shot.
Yeah,
but I guess I'm glad they happened. So, in a way, I feel like, oh yeah, I'm there, dude. And Star Wars Rogue One, even when he's not dark skinned and looks more Caucasian than
he looks more like me. He looks more like a Spaniard, a European. Yeah. You know, European Latin man.
But he had an accent, so that still works.
Yeah, he's got me there.
Yeah.
I wish I had an accent.
Anyways, before also that we start for real, after all this, you know...
Nonsense?
Well, I guess all the podcasts are nonsense. But anyways, we have a Facebook page, Garage Media Junkies. Contact us there. We try to put a few things, behind-the-scenes movies, video game trailers... All the good stuff, because I know it's daunting going to YouTube to find stuff sometimes. So, we try our best to put a few things. Lonely Shirt is waiting for an owner.
I know. I keep checking back daily, and I get so sad.
So, the only thing you need to do is put a review on iTunes for this podcast. That's it. You put the review, the first person you put it there. We will contact you, and you're going to get that shirt, all free. Even if you're from another state, I guess we can do some shipping. It's not a big deal. So, there you go.
Yep.
You free Garage Media Junkie t-shirt. I know it doesn't have any value right now, but you don't want to be that person in the 100 podcast not having that shirt. So, You don't want to be that asshole. Anyway, what are we going to talk today, Chris?
Today we're going to talk about a topic that's near and dear to my heart. It's going to be coming-of-age movies.
Ooh.
I mean, I'm a sucker for it. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I mean, that part of my life has kind of come and gone. It wasn't anything traumatic at all something I really had to overcome, so I resonate with a lot of these movies.
Maybe that's the reason. Like, God damn it, I never have anything traumatic.
I need this in my life. I always love these movies, especially when done really well. I feel like they can be really timeless, so to speak, or they can capture what life was like at that moment. And they kind of become this nostalgic piece of people's lives. And I mean, everybody has their own. I would love to hear about other people's and whether you agree with Hugo and I on this wonderful list.
Yeah.
But I don't know. How do you feel about coming of age movies just as a topic and as a general?
I think it's a great topic when it's taken. Like, it's just like in everything in life when it's well made. I mean, there's so many examples that you can point it out. Like, something so stupid and dumb like American Pie, you like it or not. It's kind of like a coming age, you know, all that part. And I think it was the first movie, at least for me.
That one was?
The abroad. No, I mean, it's not the first coming age movie they watch. But from that standpoint, you know, comedy and the stupidity of, you know, at least for me. Like, you guys know, I'm from Mexico, and sex and all those topics are taboo, and you shouldn't, you know, talk about that. Or don't jerk off, because now your hand's going to be, like,
hairy. You're going to grow hair, and you're going to go blind.
All those stuff, all the fun stuff. So, seeing a movie like that, they bring all those topics with the comedy. And, yeah, I mean, it was you watch, like, some nipples and stuff. So, it was, like, pretty cool to see that thing. So that's what I mean. Like, just a smart way to bring that topic, because again, this is not a new genre for sake.
No.
But I think it needs to change with the times,
right?
Because, you know, the youth of my parents was the same as me, and my kid youth is not gonna be the same one. You know, the same context in a way.
And I'm glad you kind of hit on American Pie, because, again, out of the gate, at least for somebody that's around Hugo and my age, that was the big coming of age movie for all of us.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was going to hit on. Again, it's a movie that, unlike any of the other coming of age movies, they're kind of one off movies.
Yeah.
American Pie is this weird exception that had many sequels. But as the series went along, more and more people stopped caring. And it's because the genre had already moved on and changed into something else. Right. And we got a new version of what our coming-of-age story was. And at that point, in the like late 90s, early 2000s, it was this new thing to be super, super raunchy in these teen movies and that have them be rated R.
Right.
I mean, Hugo said it before, the poor apple pie. You saw a kid just going to town inside of a apple pie because of something his dad said.
And because all the disinformation, sadly, for a lot of families, you know, like, I don't know in your case, but I know I have so many friends as they're in my case. Like, all the stuff that I learned about sex and all stuff was on my own.
Right, yeah.
And even because I have the curiosity to research about it, but if not, then, you know, I will have the same questions.
Keep in mind, though, anybody who's older than us will know that this was no internet, man. There was absolutely no internet.
A lot of letters and kind of pictures, but still they were like,
It just didn't exist. You couldn't just Google whatever you wanted. I mean, if you had a question
if you Google it today, it's going to come up a lot of porn sites. So be careful.
Just be careful what you do. But again, like, when you're growing up, you have questions and stuff. Yeah, and
totally.
You can ask your parents, which is super awkward. I mean, my parents try to make it as easy as possible, but you still have questions that you're like, no, I'm not asking. I cannot look my mother in the eye and ask her this question. So you can ask, you know, your friend who is equally as idiotic as you.
Worse.
Yeah, he's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
No, she can't get pregnant that way.
Yeah, exactly. No, man. Just you come off like 5 seconds before you feel.
A 5 second rule, bro.
Yeah. Exactly, something like that. But I mean, that's, you know, like the sixth part. But like, my ultimate favorite coming age movie will be Pan's Labyrinth from Guillermo del Toro.
You know what? That has been sitting on like my wanting to watch movies forever.
I think just because love it.
Artistically, it's so different than anything else. And I've always wanted to watch it. I've never had the means or just, you know, if I if I have 2.5 hours to sit down and watch something, I don't. Pan's Labyrinth doesn't always just run to the front of my brain. So it's definitely one that I definitely want to see. So why does it stand out for you?
Well, first is the setup. I think it's the Civil War in Spain after the Second World War. And it's pretty tough. For the most part, the coming-of-age movies, they try to picture in like in a cool way, something like The Breakfast Club or something like that. You know, but here it's so like deep and dramatic and cool. And in a way, in some part of my life, I mean, I'm not going to be a martyr right here and say, like, oh, my God, I have a really hard life. But it was a part of my life when I was, you know, doing the transition from elementary to middle school. It just happened some things around my family that was, you know, hard to tackle. And it was kind of brutal. You don't notice until you're older.
Right.
And then you start remembering, like, oh, my God, everything, you know, click and have sense and stuff like that. Yeah. But it's just that. It's just that part of growing up, sometimes you don't notice this stuff until you're older. And you obviously you're more smart and you understand more part of life. But I feel like that coming of age is always kind of violent in a way. I always have that idea. And a lot of people hear it violent in a negative way. I don't see it like that. You know, like a pure expression of art is violent. How this world was created was violent. How you come to this world is violent. I mean, it's not like, oh, yeah, you slide and, oh, yeah, I'm here.
Right, it wasn't painful at all.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's...
I think the violent part is just another word. It's because we have a... There's no word to describe the pain one must feel in order to experience change. And I think that that's why we label it as violent, but it's painful. It has to be.
And also in that movie, the analogy of when you're a kid, you create your own reality to face those changes.
Right.
Because you don't go and like, oh, yeah, I get it. Boom. It's so easy. I understand it.
Yeah.
You kind of come with kind of like the same reason some kids have their imaginary friends.
It's a coping mechanism.
Exactly. So in that movie, that exploited really great that part. That's the reason I love it so much.
And that was going to be like my real first question just about the genre, which was, you know, why do you think coming of age movies, no matter what time period they come from, why do you think they strike such a chord with everybody? And I think you kind of encapsulated it without even really trying, which was it helps you kind of understand what you're going through in a metaphor type of way, and you don't even put it together. You just know what you're seeing on screen and what you're emotionally reacting to is healing you in some way to see something else going through a similar fashion, and then it kind of makes your situation less hard.
Right. And again, this is going to be a personal take on everybody, you know, from everybody. Maybe my situation for some people, it's not nearly as, that's not hard. Of other people will say like, oh man, dude, you went to, you know, really deep shit. But it depends of the perspective, the context. But no matter what, I think bottom line for this genre and in life, coming to age, it's just that tough moment that you become an adult. And it's in a way, it's easy to understand, but it's kind of hard to describe it.
Right.
Because in a way, you sometimes deny it. Like, and you know, we hear it so many times. You know, I wish I was younger, or I don't want to be adult. I need to deal with all this crap.
And it's usually when you're on the cusp of it. When you're a kid, you can't wait to be older.
Yeah.
And then when you're standing on the edge of that diving board, you're like, "Hey, no, not ready for this."
Yeah. Oh God damn it! Now I have a kid. No, it's not true. I love my kid a lot. But, it's not easy. I think that's the part. Like, I guess the main, if I need to describe it in a way, it's kind of like the loss of innocence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do think that that is a theme in most really well-constructed coming-of-age stories, is you're losing a piece of yourself that was a child and is now transitioning into that adulthood. And it hurts like a mother.
And I think that's the reason Marvel movies are really successful. Because, you know, I mean, a superhero is the most innocent thought to have, you know.
Somebody that's purely good.
Yeah, purely good and, like, ridiculous. Like, who has... Nobody flies in this reality. Nobody does those crazy things.
Right.
Unless you're Logan, that son of a bitch is, like, in the middle. But, yeah, I think that's the reason we appeal to those movies so much. It's still some fragments of memories in our brains stuck there that kind of trigger, like those movies triggers. And like you say, it can heal. It can make you remind a painful time in your life.
For me, it also helps remind that you weren't alone.
Right.
In that point in your life, because as a teenager you're overly dramatic and you kind of forget.
I can wait for my kid to be that age.
Right, but you kind of, again, psychologically you're more focused on yourself and maybe the small circle of friends. You start to push your family outside the bubble at that point. Mm-hmm. But
don't see me naked, Mom.
Oh my God.
The typical.
But you're struggling with that aspect of changing how you view the world and how the world views you, but you're overly dramatic. And so to see somebody else going through, literally watch it happen on screen, something kind of similar to you, you don't feel so alone, even though your parents can talk to you at nauseam, like, I'm going through the same thing. Kids will have that answer. If you don't know my life.
Right.
Yes, I do. I wiped your ass since you were like 2 and a half. No, yeah. That's bad. No, you shouldn't be wiping asses since you were born.
Yeah,
but
you were a kid, period.
Yeah, so I mean, to me, it gives comfort, I think, to a lot of people. And when they do see it, either as a kid or as an adult, it just becomes this whole, like, nostalgia thing. So when you look at movies most commonly associated with, I guess, popularizing these coming-of-age movies, you think of the 80s movies. Like you mentioned, The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, that's probably one of the most iconic ones.
Or Pretty in Pink.
Yeah, yeah, I think I remembered that one.
Yeah, any woman who grew up in the 80s would think that that's me. And you know what? I get it. And I feel bad because the only perspective and lens that you have is a white, Caucasian, you know, female.
Right.
If you grew up in the barrio, you cannot relate to one thing on there other than maybe some situational things, like maybe her parents forgot her birthday. Every kid can kind of somewhat feel that angst of, like, nobody remembered my birthday. But on that, you're not going to relate to too much of that
especially
movie.
Especially if it's the barrio. It's like, dude, yeah. It was probably more like going out and try to kick ass with everybody. And that's what I say at the beginning, you know. It's just the context is different for everybody. So let's be tolerant with each other.
It is, yeah. I think one of my favorites from as a kid, I don't know why, but I mean, I get it. It would have been La Bamba, Richie Valens. I don't know why I loved that movie as a kid. Yeah. And
probably because in some way, you know, since we're talking, like, you know, a lot of these movies are the typical Caucasian movie. Somehow, I mean, maybe Chris didn't mention it yet in this podcast, but has some family, you know, from Mexico.
I do, yeah.
In a way, he's part Mexican.
Part, but again, it's something out of my life where I look it, but I don't. It's hard. People don't immediately identify it as part of my life.
Yeah.
Like I was talking about, and I joke about it that, you know, I look more Spaniard than I look Mexican. Yeah. But that's only because my mom is more German, and I kind of inherited those physical traits. But I still identify a lot with.
Wait a minute. So since you look kind of Spaniard, do you talk in Spanish with the thong,
like the little Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Welcome to Barcelona. Over here, you have all of the wonderful things that we have for you.
There you go.
I know. I do not. Contrary to what you think, I don't know. I identify a little bit more. I don't. When I look at the white suburban families, I don't exactly identify too much. But
right.
I don't know. I'm kind of stuck in the middle.
Yeah.
I'm one of the. Your biracial kids where you identify with both halves at certain points.
Yeah.
And then when you do grow up, you're kind of like, it really just depends on where I'm at, with which side I'm identifying with. My wife does the same thing. She's, you know, half white and then she's also half Indonesian.
Right.
And so she kind of pulls fast ones on me where I'm like, I had no idea this was important to you, but okay.
Well, I think more now in this time, it's becoming more common, those situations.
Yeah, more prominent, yeah.
I mean, I'm Mexican. My wife is, like, typical. Well, I wouldn't say typical because...
But if you just took a glance at her, she...
Yeah, she's like your average Caucasian woman.
Yeah.
Now, she's... We live in California, but she's nothing like the typical California woman.
No, she is not.
And if she was, I wouldn't be married to her. She know it. Anyways, yeah, I think that, you know, it's just a traumatic time when you transition. Again, maybe it's not as crazy than others, but not even biology way, more like in your way of thinking. Suddenly you
start
it's like exposed to so many things. You start to understanding other things. Like I think as soon as I become a teenager, kind of start caring less about religion. And my parents, in a way, they're... So, see, like, even that is a really tough, kind of like a really tough situation. Being that your family is into, like, at least for me, it was Catholicism. And at that point, I didn't care. Like, I don't want to go to church, you know. Trying to take those first kind of independent decisions.
Right. And I think that's what... mainly strikes a chord, because everybody can relate to certain aspects of these movies, and depending on, you know, which ones strike the chord with you, or which ones are your favorite, yeah. You know, so do you have any other, like, favorites when it comes to I guess anything that even comes close to your Pan's Labyrinth, as far as like that coming of age, even if you can't relate to it, but just something you enjoyed watching?
One that's more deeper in so many levels, and I think for a young generation, maybe has a more meaning right now in so many ways, but specifically on gender, like topic, all that scene of what is called LGBT. So sorry if I don't know the name.
The LGBTQA, yeah.
But it's called "The Blue Is the Warmest Color," and it's just these couple of young girls that they, you know, try to be together, and it's really tough. I mean, especially when you have families doesn't support you at all.
Right, and it's super tempting now to maybe make films where it seems like they're all included and everybody's inclusive. We were joking around about that a little bit earlier, but you know, bravo to the films that actually tackle the harder subject matter of actually coming out to your family, because again, I think that's where our time now, you know, your coming of age is. We have a lot more people identifying as something that's not fitting within the box of what we've had for the past 2,000 years, which is, are you straight or not? And people are bi, you can be pansexual, queer. There's more that you can identify with. So bravo to the movies that actually tackle a lot of that deeper stuff and make everybody else who wishes to know more at least empathize with some of the situations that happen.
Yeah, I mean... I care more about these movies than something like Hunger Games that we can debate. It's also a coming of age movie too.
True.
But I don't know. I mean,
again, yeah, the coming of age in that one, when you strip away all of the fantasy and the sci-fi-ness of it all, it's just this, you know, do you sacrifice yourself for the greater good of your own family?
Right.
And that's what it is at the end of the day, just stretched over three books and then overthrowing a government. Oppressive government. Right. So,
I mean, it's a cool message, but you know, it's, I guess the movie that I just mentioned for me has more value because actually, you know, based on reality, like it's something that it can happen right now.
Right. I was going to ask you, how often did you have to face overthrowing a tyrannical government versus maybe having to go against your parents' quote unquote normal expectations of what you would grow up into? So even though you don't identify as, you know, gay or lesbian or anything, you did have to kind of reject your family's religious viewpoints. Yeah, so again, there are some notes in that movie that you could identify with, or at least respect.
Yeah, in some regard. And it's well made. It's a well made movie, so I highly recommend it. So that's another one. But I need to think deeper to at least meaningful, you know, movies in that genre.
And this is where I feel bad, because now you're going to make me seem super shallow. Because when I was thinking of this, I was thinking like I had ones that really meant something to me, but when I thought about it, the best snapshot of what I identified with at the time was when I was an actual teen going through it. I mean, when it came out, I'm ashamed, but I'm not ashamed. I really freaking like Mean Girls.
Mean Girls.
Lindsay Lohan in her prime. Yeah. Yeah. You have Regina George, who is played by, oh crap, why does the name escape me? Rachel McAdams.
Yeah.
A very, very well put together movie. Tina Fey did a fantastic job adapting the book to a screenplay.
Right.
I thought it was very funny. It dealt with a lot of issues and things that girls and boys were struggling with at the time in the mid-2000s when I was in high school. I don't know. I just thought it was a very unique way where no matter what generation of people have seen that movie, there are kids today that still talk about Mean Girls. And they can relate to it even though that point in time has passed. That's almost 15 years ago.
Right. And I think now that you mention it, coming of age normally has that image of that specific time frame on school.
Yeah.
Like it, you know, being bullied and all that stuff.
Right, yeah.
That because, I mean, again, maybe I'm not, like, again, my situation is not even, like, maybe some kid on, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful here, but, like, some kid in right now in Syria, like, oh my God, like, it's a whole, you know, on the other side of the spectrum.
It's an entirely different way to grow up, yeah.
Yeah, so, but at least you can, for the most part, universally, you can relate to this idea of the, you know, like the typical handsome guys and the crew of the cool guys and being bullied for, you know, these other mean kids and stuff like that. You know, your typical struggle in school.
Everything is very subjective to what you feel and... Yeah, there's no point. I mean, no, I don't think there's any film that perfectly encapsulates just coming of age to anybody who watches it around the world. It's always going to exclude somebody or nobody's going to connect with it. But Hugo's right. Yeah, you can say which ones you really like, but there are kids and people that grew up and that look at it and think that's the issues you have to deal with, really.
Yeah, everybody else outside of America will say like first world problems.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Some girls being mean to you online. First with problems. I haven't eaten in like 3 days.
Yeah.
And we get that. We understand that. Yeah. This is just, I guess, more of our media's take on coming of age and why it's...
Right. I mean, we know those situations exist, but this is, again, this is nothing serious. So we acknowledge there like those problems, but specifically and exclusively in movies, that's how most often is portrayed.
And most of the time, especially here, it's usually, and you know, even in anything in a modern culture, it's about, I hate to say it, but it's about getting laid.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
It's about overcoming any like kind of like...
Superbad is another good movie about coming of age.
You have Superbad, you have Clueless.
Now, if you want to go super dramatic and dark, and now I remember a really good one. They kind of shocked me a lot, and it's one of my favorites, American History X.
Oh my goodness.
Edward Norton, yeah. It was a pretty good movie, and I mean, really dark. And I think that's a big example of the same thing of school and ideologies and stuff, but going to the extreme, you know?
Right, because you know what? Someone somewhere is going through that exact scenario, and they...
Especially talking about, like, these last elections, that movie...
It's more true today than it has been in the last 20 years since it's been made.
Yep. So... that's a great movie of knowing how vulnerable you are in that age. I'm not going to try to spoil you people listening to the movie. But it's just pretty much how vulnerable you are, how people can influence you so easily. Then after you pass that transition, it's like, what the fuck I'm doing? Like, everything that they told me is a lie.
Yeah, you never question what you've been told. And I think that's what kids should be able to do, is question their parents' ideologies and their theologies. And parents who are at least somewhat intelligent and strong can at least defend what they're believing instead of just blind. No, this is what it is because this is the way it is.
Right, exactly.
And
which
that way the kid...
kind of like the Norton character does a lot. So... And again, everything works, like you say, with questioning your parents, obviously, in a respectful environment. Everything is valid. Always, you know, if it's, you know, in a respectful way. But yeah, that's a really dark and...
but it's a movie. But it's a real one. I think people kind of forget that that's a coming of age story, yeah, and it's more of a political statement yeah. than anything else. But you're right; it is a coming of age story because he is trying to overcome that piece of himself and find that identity and what's important to him.
Yeah, I think that the part that sort of got me is that part of, because I'm being there, probably you're being there.
Yeah,
that you have some certain beliefs at that age, but you're not reasoning, you're not questioning them, you're just
blindly following.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you believe in that, and that's it. There's nothing else outside. And when,
or everybody else is wrong.
Right. And when you finally hit that part of, I'm right, you know, like, I'm doing the right thing. It's this, you know, that part. And again, that's the part of the coming of age, when you start questioning things in a more intelligent, smart way.
Right.
So that's a good one. Do you have another one, Chris?
Well, none that gonna top that, man. No, you have them, like, you know, The Graduate.
The Graduate, that's a good one.
So it's an amazing film.
I mean, just by itself, if you don't care about the coming of age genre, just, you know, the movie is like top notch with Mr. Hoffman. So young and handsome.
He was so young.
Yeah.
So charismatic. It's a great film that doesn't. I liked it too because it wasn't, for the time period in 1967, it wasn't.
67.
Dang. It wasn't conventional by any means. Super controversial. Ended in a super. Not bad way, but it ended in a way that audiences weren't expecting, and it left people questioning, and I loved it. I remember watching it in college and thinking, like, this is an amazing
movie.
Yeah.
It's almost like a cult. I mean, yeah, it's kind of like a cult following for that movie. I mean, probably a lot of people remember it, but now it's like has that mysticism around that movie.
Right. It's more of kind of like this, I guess, movie classic of like a film history. Yeah. This is a great example of film in this time. Yeah. And I don't know. And that's why I like coming of age stories when they're done well, is because they can become timeless.
Yeah.
Everybody, and I mean, I can't, but everybody at some point can. The point of the movie is, you know, he's hit on by an older woman, his girlfriend's mom. Not that you go through it, but you know how that feels when somebody wants you and you're just too young and you're just like, okay, it's something I can jump at. But then you realize you're in way too deep. That to me, I don't know.
I can relate to that entirely. Oh, I always feel attracted to older women. So.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're attracted to older, stronger, badass women. If you don't know what we're talking about, go listen to the Crushcast.
There you go.
It is an amazing podcast that we did with our wives.
Just go there. And it's one of the most popular, though. So, and I can understand why.
Another one that I do remember that actually my dad showed me when I was young is American Graffiti.
Oh,
George Lucas.
George Lucas, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another one.
Back in 1973.
I need to watch it again. I have big memory of watching it, and now I need to refresh my brain.
I remember thinking that it was going to be the dumbest movie because it was old and had old cars. But when I watched it, again, more testament to coming of age, you relate to certain characters, certain you know, pieces of that script where, you know, they break off and they kind of have to question, like, no, this is not what I want out of life. I do want to go to college, or I don't want to go to college. And it all happens over the course of a night. So, I don't know. Another great, I guess,
coming of age.
Yeah, piece of film history.
Yeah. Well, I guess in conclusion is that obviously we enjoy the genre in a way. Not all movies need to tag it like coming of age. I mean, that term is kind of vague. So, like, something like I mentioned, American History X, so political, but you can take it also from that other angle of coming of age movie.
Yeah. You
know? It's so many Hunger Games, even when it looks like it's a fantasy movie.
I think that coming of age movies are more powerful when they're not like angled that way.
Right.
When that's not the main focus, it could become so much more than just a very shallow, like, I want to get laid or I want my first kiss.
Which are fine. Some are fun, but you know, it's always better when it's a consequence of the story than just thinking like, oh yeah, that's my market.
Yeah.
All right. So we suggest so many good movies. Just pause it and really, like, have time to try to watch them. I know it's hard, especially for some of the older movies, but be patient. Don't be a prick. like again, some young generation don't like black and white. It's like, oh, you're missing kind of really great pieces out there, but again, this is your decision. Man. Anyways, we're going to jump to another Rach topic. Yeah, we finished with the movies. Now we're moving on the video game part.
We are. Oh, my goodness. So,
and Chris is going to give us a little more details about it.
All right. So one thing, when Hugo asked me if I wanted to talk about something about video games, I have been super strong about this topic. Yeah. And now that he finally has an Xbox One, everybody Yay. Congratulate him. Yeah.
You can find me as a film underscore Inc. on... It's film underscore Inc. or...
I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, I think so. If not, I will write it in the description. You can add me and kick my ass all
He would be the guy with the dreadlocks and a kilt.
And a kilt, yeah. What
That's
a
how you know you found the right film, Inc.
Yep.
So, I feel really passionate about the current state of our game's DLC, which stands for downloadable content. So if I use the term DLC, you know I'm talking about downloadable content. Gone are
Garage
the
Media Junkie Encyclopedia right there.
Put that on a shirt.
Yeah.
Gone are the days of cartridges and CD discs where you put them in and your entire game is on that. Start to finish, everything you need is on that disc. If there's a broken level when they shipped it, you were stuck. It was an unfinishable game. And that happened quite often. But now we live in a time where they can ship a game and it's like 3/4 finished. And they can patch it later via the internet. And so my my game disc, which only reads a certain way, now can access my memory banks in my computer or my Xbox or my PlayStation and read the correct files and fix the game for me. Yeah. But what that's also brought is now content creators are putting out games and they're thinking, oh my gosh, I have this great idea for more guns to add in or more weapons or, hey, how about this cool little idea for a level that we didn't add in? And what they'll do is like 2-3 months down the line after the game's launches, they'll use it. You can spend $5 and buy that DLC, that downloadable content, and add it to your game.
Fuck you.
And the concept of it is actually kind of great. If a developer thinks of something that's awesome and it's going to add value to the game, and why don't you add it? That's awesome. When this becomes bad practice is when they add stuff that doesn't change the game at all.
Right.
If you look at things like Call of Duty, you can pay $20 to get a bunch of crates. Right. You open them up and there's no guarantee you're going to get the item you want. It's kind of like gambling. Yeah. You open it up and it's like, nope, I got a crappy gun. Delete. Next one. And kids are spending gobs of money on this.
Kind of like the phone market kind of thing.
Yeah.
A little bit. Because I think the only DLC that I've bought so far, it's the Borderlands 2 DLC. But that's what you're talking. When the publisher thinks like, how can hands are already an amazing game?
Yeah.
For those that you don't know, it's probably in my top 10. I would say top 5. You know, video games. But anyways, you have these amazing games, these amazing campaign, and all these ads and multiplayer and all this stuff. I mean, the game is solid, period. It's, you know, that's how it was. That's how they, you know, developed the game. Here it is, your game.
Start to finish.
Exactly. And it seems also like DLC is our hints of that storyline, but, you know, not like, oh, we forget to finish some part. Here, buy the part that's kind of broken or something like that.
Right.
That's the part that kind of bugs me.
My big kick in the pants moment. I used to like the Assassin's Creed series. And Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, I remember playing the game as it was. And I get through, you play through memories.
Yeah.
I get to memory 12. And all of a sudden, before it loads, I'm on memory 14. And I'm thinking, I skipped two memories. How did this happen?
Yeah.
You go there and it says, go download them.
Yeah.
What?
Or pay me for downloading.
I had to pay $20 to go download those two other memories that I needed to finish the game. I could finish it, but I don't know what happened and how I got from Rome to, you know, all the way down to Italy, back up to... you know, Barcelona. No, it's like Constantinople. Yeah. You follow this plot line and all of a sudden you're like, boom, I'm in Rome. How did I get here? What the heck? And so that was my first introduction of this is a bad omen.
Right.
Now we're getting games that are coming out, like for, we're going to talk about things like Destiny.
Right.
Came out, and before the game even came out, they said buy the season pass along with it. And for those of you that don't know, season pass is like, hey, you buy this for $25, you get all the DLC that we promised to come out this year. Whether that's two DLC or five, you're going to get them all. So it's like prepaying for something you have no idea what it is. But people do it. I am sort of guilty of this as well because it is kind of a deal. $25 instead of paying $40.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll do that, but...
It's still, I mean, you say it like it's a gamble. You don't know. I tried to tend to not... Yeah, I think video games have never pre-order anything so far. Just for the same basic reasoning. It's maybe if it was Borderlands, I
would. Well, here's the thing. If a series has already proven itself to you...
Yeah.
Go for it. You know what the developer is. You know the story and what you're getting into.
Right.
Like Mass Effect. I knew what I was getting into when I pre-ordered that. I loved the other three.
Right.
And even though this one was kind of glitchy, it's fine. It's what I want.
Right.
But if it's a new game that you have no idea about, but all your friends are getting it.
Yeah. Don't go with the hype. Especially.
You put the cart before the horse.
Yeah. Especially considering the price of admission. It's not like you're going to pre-order a ticket for a movie that's going to cost you $15. You can swallow that. Probably if you have...
But if that movie cost you $60, you couldn't return it.
In hell I will pre-order anything.
I do have to hand it to video games. How long have they been at this price point of $60?
For a while, but it still is a high price.
It's a high price, but considering the market of inflation over the past 20 years, because it's been at $60 for over 20 years... My only thing is, they've offset that by DLC.
Yeah, they need... It feels like the perfect excuse for how we're going to deal to, you know, how we're going to raise the price for these games. If we raise them, people obviously is going to become nuts, considering their market is young people. They don't have a lot of money in their hands.
Right.
So, yeah, let's put these DLC in... Suddenly, you think you pay 60 plus something. I mean, $60 for the game. But once you make the summary of all this DLC, it's like, no, dude, you pay for $120 a game.
I'm not happy to admit it at all. But I mean, when you total up my Destiny purchase, I paid. I got the game on sale for about $50. Yeah. But I paid for the season pass for $35. $35. And then I paid for the next expansion that came out, which was $40. And then I paid for the following one, which was $35. I mean, this game, this one I can't knock because it's been around for 3 years. It's given me so many hours. I almost can't really hate it. But I'm in over 100 and some odd, almost $150.
Now, you saying you've been playing for 3 years.
Again, that's a great... But you know what? There are games like Call of Duty that get swapped out every year. But you can drop that kind of money for skin packs, for loot crates, for keys to open up the crates. The amount of steps that they sell these things at, they're called microtransactions, where they charge you $2. So you know what's $2 more? What's $2 more? Hey, you can get 20 boxes now for $5. What's $5? Come on. Exactly. Before you know it, these kids have spent hundreds of dollars just on the box, not even the game yet.
Yep.
And then within 4 months, they're already getting ready to buy the next version of the game. Yeah. It's highway robbery when you think about it.
Even when I think about like GTA, I think it was the number 5 until they made these microtransactions too, right?
Yep.
But they're also, I feel like they're more well-taught. Well, not well taught. It's like they're not trying to rip you apart. You know, that's what I mean.
I would agree. I'm so glad you brought it up because GTA has done what a lot of companies are starting to do. And I think that it was great with a game like GTA. It was the highest selling piece of media, not just video game, piece of media in all of history.
Yeah.
So suck on that, everybody who says video games aren't worth a damn.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the greatest thing, but I mean, it is, but it's not the greatest role model kit.
Right.
Either way, this game had all this free DLC. Usually you have to pay. So with the multiplayer portion, usually games like Call of Duty or Titanfalls, they'll say, hey, you want 4 new map packs to play on and 3 new Titans or 3 new things, pay $20. When you do that, your player base is divided. Because everybody who just bought the normal game has no access to that until they buy it. Exactly. Which means now you have two pools of players that you have. And if you release another DLC pack, the only people who are in that one as well are the people who have bought both.
Yeah.
Or the people who maybe just bought the second one. You are completely killing your game when you do it that way. So what Grand Theft Auto did was, everything is free. Everything that we create for this game is going to be free. Everybody gets it. So everybody is still together. Now, if you want those items, you buy them in-game with your cash.
Right.
Your character can earn money like crazy, by the way. Right. Robbing stores, turning in stolen cars.
You know, average things that people do in real life.
It takes a while. I'm not going to lie. It takes a while to get there. But when you do get there and you spend the money, you did it and it's free.
Right. Or if you're a lazy ass, well, if you have the money, then buy...
shark cards.
Exactly.
$20 gets you $2,500,000 in the game, and you will be very surprised about how fast that goes. It's basically, I'm not going to lie, it's basically one supercar completely tricked out, and you'll maybe have $500,000 left over to kind of spend on ammo or maybe a new pair of clothes.
Your new Supra tennis shoes or something.
Right, yeah. And it's, no, because things are super expensive, but who goes right? It goes super fast. Not the money. I mean, not the car. The money. The money goes. It just drains right through your hands. But it can be obtained freely.
Exactly. That's what. That I think that's your point. Whereas Call of Duty, like, no, it's no other way.
You want the gun with the little rubber duckies on it, you got to pay $5.95 just like everybody else.
And at least, you know, like you're saying, GTA, like, all right. Just like, almost kind of like in real life. Rich people has access to them virtual money easily. But if, you know, if you... And I think that's more enjoyable.
It is, but then you run into the issue of pay to win. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that saying, but there's a pay to win. Whereas little Johnny over there, whose parents have a trust fund for him already, he can has his daddy's credit card. He can spend you know, hundreds of dollars a month on GTA shark cards. Whereas me... I maybe get to spend a little bit of the money I get at Christmas or my birthday money to buy one shark card a year to be like, please, please, wife, please. And she'll let me. But it goes by so quick.
Yeah.
And I can't afford the, like, all the nice cars, but little dickwad over there can, and he absolutely destroys me.
Yeah.
But I'm a better player. He just can spend that cash.
That cash.
And so for me, that's what makes it slightly less enjoyable, but I can't fault GTA for that.
Right.
They gave me the option to actually get everything he has.
Just
to work for it.
Work for a bitch.
Right.
And that's kind of like the type of DLC I tend to not like. Like, I like something, like I say, Borderlands 2 had a great expansion. The Witcher, I hear, that has great DLCs.
It does.
You know, they give you the main story. This is the story of this guy, blah, blah, blah. This is what happened. You want to, you know, be curious and know more. Well, we have, you know, these DLCs that actually... You play for it, and then you develop on the story.
It builds on the story without taking anything away. And what I can respect about Borderlands DLC and any other game publishers that do it is it doesn't feel like they created everything and then cut that content out and sold you a half-made game.
Yeah.
And that way they can cash in on it a little bit later. It was a full game. They made it after the fact. They built on it. It became a better game with that DLC.
Yeah.
And here's the sad thing. It's the rarest thing in the gaming world right now to have real, concrete, downloadable content that means something. And it's not just a gimmick.
And actually, now that you brought it up, because you're saying it's kind of weird, recently, for you guys are releasing right now to us, you know, there was the celebration event on Disney with Star Wars and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Where we have the first glimpse of Episode 8, which apparently Chris hated.
I didn't hate it. I just wasn't impressed.
I'm just teasing. But then also we have Battlefront 2, which Battlefront 1, I'd never played, but from what I hear...
The Star Wars one, right?
Yeah, Star Wars Battlefront. And what I hear for most people is that, on a technical level, it's amazing in so many ways. But it's just no campaign, multiplayer, blah, blah, blah. So apparently they're trying to fix this on the 2. It's going to be a big-ass campaign. It's canon Star Wars story. And the other interesting part that I read, it's... I don't know how many DLCs, but at least what they claim, it's most of it, or if not all of them, are going to be free.
So what I'm thinking is it's going to be another one of those, you earn credits in the game for mm-hmm. playing the game, and yeah. then you can buy certain guns or weapons and such. So when they do let that DLC out, everybody gets it, because what you don't want to do is strike and cut your player yeah. base in half every time you release more DLC. It is the most toxic thing a game development company can do to their player base. It'll kill a game in its development. Now, Battlefront 1, who goes right? They did things kind of backwards. I think what happened was there was a lot of rights that were passed back and forth between the publishing company, the people that own Disney
yeah.
and Star Wars, and then DICE, who actually made the game.
Right.
And it's been in development hell for about 4 years, and so they kind of finally got the green light, and they pushed it out as quickly as possible, which is why all we really have is a multiplayer.
Yeah.
I think they've put all this effort the last year and a half into this Battlefront 2.
Yeah.
I'm actually really excited for it, and it brings really it brings me hope to know that technically everything could be free, because one of my biggest gripes about Battlefront 1 was you could buy the season pass for $55. That's almost the price of the game.
Yeah.
It blew my little tiny brain to almost pay double for something that just should be included anyway. So I did what any smart person would do, which is to just wait until Christmas time.
Yep.
And then that season pass went down to $10, and
there you go.
I got them all. But I shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, $60 seems a ripoff. You know, it's,
I paid for my right to play the game.
You could buy another game with that $50-something.
And there's no way it's going to keep me there and justify its cost of another game of $55.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's the, I mean, these DLCs stay here for forever, probably. I don't think it's going to go away at all.
No, because we can send a message by not buying it, but you know people are going to do it. You know people are going to pre-order. That's why they have those pre-order.
That's the reason No Man's Sky.
Oh, my God. Right? That's a perfect example of pre-ordering a game without ever seeing it, and how many people were super upset that it wasn't what they wanted. Well, if you had just waited. But I guess these pre-order stuff and the season pass stuff, it's kind of like a Happy Meal.
Yeah.
It's like that toy you get with your meal, and it's the only reason you want it. You don't even care about the food.
Yeah.
This game, if you pre-order it now, you get a special weapon and a special mission. But if you don't, you're going to miss out. So people just throw money.
Kind of like Breath of the Wild. I think if you bought the season pass, like everybody kind of get excited. It was like, say, you get a Nintendo Switch a t-shirt. And I was like, what? We're going to get like a special. No, no, no. Link has a Nintendo Switch shirt on the game.
No, that is horrible.
So it was like little thing, like what? Why are you gonna want to pay another $30 for some shit like that?
Nintendo for the longest time stayed away from this issue of DLC, and I had to kind of give them credit But again, I
knowing their practices and how you
dig
know.
My heels in and not budge.
Yeah,
to me, you're right. I guess got the amiibos, they all of a sudden saw this giant cash revenue of like, oh, but if you buy this amiibo, it'll unlock this in the game. So really, when you think about it, amiibos are $12.95.
For one.
And that's if you can find it.
Yeah,
go for the ones that are rare, and that little piece of DLC that does nothing just costs you $65, almost $100 because of supply and demand. Thank you, economics.
Yeah.
But what it does is you put it on the little pad and it unlocks special items. Like for Breath of the Wild, I was really interested in this, if you put on like the Link amiibo from Smash Brothers on it while you're playing the game, you can get a Epona in the game. That's the only way you can get a Epona, which is Link's horse. I'm geeking out so bad.
Yeah.
It's the only way, you agree. It's the only way you can get his horse. But if I want it, I got to pay $12. I got to pay $12 to go out there and go buy that Link amiibo. So even though it's not technically quote unquote DLC,
still,
I still got to go out and buy it. It's more money from me.
Yeah.
My buddy is so deep in his amiibos. He has almost all of them from everything, from games he doesn't even play.
Wow.
He'll come on the podcast. Everybody can razz him then. His name is John Hall. I'm calling you out, John.
There you go.
You have to justify your 80 plus amiibo addiction.
80? Well, I guess they're cute.
Cute is... My Power Rangers are cute. This, no.
Yeah. And like you say, it's just even attempt to find them.
Then your DLC endeavor and your collective, your collector vibes are just... You're,
yeah.
It's something that super makes me angry, and I'm sad that this is the way things are. And this is why we can't have nice things, guys.
Yeah. Thanks for ruining.
Ruining everything. I know I'm part of the problem.
Right.
But I'm at least responsible with it.
I guess at some point, publishers are going to need to notice that. I mean, like you say, a lot of people buy it, but at the same time, I can see a lot of people concerned, like us, about all these deals. Shit.
It's almost been victimized like cigarette companies. Mm. How dare you sell this? It kills people, but they're like... Eh. People still buy it, so I'm not going to stop making it. People still buy those Call of Duty packs, even though every single reviewer says it is the worst thing to happen.
Why?
But they still buy it.
Yeah. I think we're going to, what we can say is, like, I think that's kind of like what we try to advocate all the time here.
I guess.
Do your research. Don't pull the trigger just for the sake of, like, oh, fuck it. I mean, I know it's exciting. I'm not going to say, like, be hypocritical and say, like, oh, I don't do those kind of things and blah, blah. Yeah, sometimes, like, I buy things just for impulse. But the most that we research, we need to ask our question, is this DLC necessary? Do I need it? I'm going to even have the time to play it? You know, stuff like that. At the end of the day, we as a consumer, we have the money. We have the power.
Yeah, they don't have our money. That's how they're rich, is because they get our money.
So, just that. I mean, if you're excited for one, go for it. But try to think about it thoroughly, I guess, and think of that you maybe are going to have more expenses during the month. It's not just video games and movies and all this fun stuff. All that.
Much as I wish they could feed us, exactly. They can't. And parents, just be aware on some of those games where it's kind of like gambling, where you pay this money and the kids open up the box and they might not get what they're looking for. And so it becomes this weird addiction like gambling, and they get addicted to paying all this money to get what they want the right way, the right role, the right stats. Yeah. It's not okay. So just be mindful of what your kids are spending that money on.
Don't think that it's just like on the cell phone, like on consoles happen too.
Yeah. So just watch what your kids are spending and make sure your credit cards aren't exactly easily accessed.
Yeah. It's so many like tutorials on YouTube and stuff like that. So many info about how to locked up, you know.
I think I saw one. I think I'm going to give Hugo the link. I saw some kid trying to say how everybody could get free games on Xbox. Mm. And he was showing everybody how you just click it and you just mash A, mash A, mash A, mash A, and then you hit B and the game just starts downloading. Yeah. But what he's really doing is his parents have their credit card on on the thing, and he's just mashing A really quickly so he doesn't see that screen, and he just starts downloading. The kid must have bought like $180 worth of games just in his tutorial, and then he immediately deleted him. He goes, yeah, but I didn't really want those. I'm just showing everybody how you do it. And then there are people that are writing in the comments going, oh my god, I tried it, it works. And then later on people are like, you're so stupid. And then they're like, oh my gosh, my parents got so mad at me, don't listen to this kid, it's a scam. But people do this. You know, credit card companies sometimes don't exactly always give refunds. Xbox doesn't give refunds. They're going to But
after I don't know how many years, some of the other
But this is something that it's not in place yet. So if it happens to you, you're not getting that money back.
Not at all. So you better play those games that your kid downloaded.
Are going to be terrible.
Yeah, probably something like Minecraft or something like that.
I like Minecraft. It's peaceful.
Okay, Chris. Whatever. I'm not going to argue about that. No, I will agree that it's kind of cool. I just, my brain doesn't work as a kid, so I'm not that creative anymore.
It's okay. Just build your dirt hut. I build lots of dirt huts.
I just put a pile of like dirt and like, yeah, that's my statue of shit. Yeah.
Everybody come stay at the shit.
Whatever. Do Minecraft have DLCs?
It does. In the form of skin packs. You can download it so that the textures look different and more.
But I guess if you're on PC, you don't need that.
Some people mod certain things like skins, like so your character can look a certain way, and you just either can download it or sometimes you just pay them a certain amount, like a dollar, and you can get the skin packs. Same thing here. I paid a dollar for the Power Ranger skin pack. Hey, you know what? I'm going to... That's exactly what I always wanted.
Right.
I'm not talented enough to block out what a Power Ranger looks like.
See, I mean, again, that's the reason we're trying to say we're not hypocritical. We're guilty, too.
Yeah.
I bought a fucking Kilt because that was being my dream since I was a teenager.
For his avatar.
So I can't have it in real life, but in, you know, in my virtual life, I can have a motherfucking Kilt. Nobody can tell me anything. I bought it.
I bought a Green Ranger. I bought a Green Ranger.
There you go.
It was a $10 outfit. I have no regrets about it whatsoever.
Yep. So there you go, people. Be smart. Don't buy or pre-order just because the hype. I think also the social media stuff, like the YouTubers and all these like video games outlets, in a way, they're kind of guilty sometimes of all these, like, you know, culture of buying stuff.
They have to buy it if they want you to watch their video or they want you to read their review. They have to. So they're part of the machine. They're part of the problem, so to speak. And in a way, they're kind of biased. So do your own research. See if it's something that you, yourself, not your friends, not what they say, but if you would like it.
Like recently, I saw it with Persona 5 that a lot of people...
Yeah.
You know, writing cool stuff, and based on what I watch, I feel interested. But so many like people is like, because suddenly Persona 5 name, it's everywhere. It's like, oh, I guess I need to buy this game, and they just start playing. Like, this is like those fucking Japanese games. Well, what do you expect, idiots?
Exactly.
Like, you don't even research what is about the fucking game.
Yeah, don't be that guy.
Yeah, again, because $60. I know that's a fair price for a game. But it's a lot of money.
No, it is a fair money. I mean, not fair money. It is a fair price, but it is a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, it makes me have to really think. And I know I talk about games a lot, but I mean, I don't really get them a lot. Yeah. I kind of save my money all year, and I only buy one or two out of like the 10 that I really want. And I just kind of have to roll with it. Or I find them on sale, and I have to wait a year until I can play them, because it's quite a commitment to pay that $60 out of your pocket.
Normally, recently, I think the only one that paid full price, I think, was the last Lord of the Rings Shadow of Mordor.
Yeah?
That was the only last one that I can remember that I paid. Like, all right, it seems really great. I want it now.
Play
it. So I bought it. But other than that, I normally, like, you just wait. It doesn't bother me anymore. It was a point when you're younger than, like, you know, like, I want it right now. But these days, like, if I could... I can wait a couple months until they're probably... I mean, the experience is not going to change just because I wait a couple months.
Right, and the older you are, you can kind of put away $20 this month, $20 next month, $20... Because $20 is easier to swallow than $60 at one point.
Yeah.
And so you just put it away, and then by the third month, you have your game for literally $20.
Yeah, I mean, really, like, I went to Walmart today for some stuff, and I was really tempted to buy an Xbox game. It was The Witcher 3 for $20. That's a really great deal.
That's a super great deal.
Because I think even the digital store is like 40 or something still right now. So
I'll have to check. I think there might have been a spring sale recently where you could have gotten everything.
Yeah.
So I don't know. But yeah, you're right. That's a cheap price deal, for $20.
So I was like, oh, damn it. Get out of here. I don't need it right now.
And that's the other thing too. You may think like, oh, it's a great... Because I bought Arkham Knight Batman and it was like $20, but it was for the deluxe.
Yeah,
everything came with it. And I can justify that price.
Yeah.
I could pay for all that DLC all day long for $20. Again, I didn't take into account my time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's been like a year and a half, and my wife still holds it over my head that game has not been touched. John, the guy we're going to bring in soon, he also holds it over my head. He's like, hey, you touched that Arkham Knight yet? No. And he's like, oh, such a waste. It's because he's like, it's a great game, but I have to balance my time, and certain other games are calling. And
Shame on you, Chris.
It is. I'm going to finish it. As soon as... You know what? I will.
Summer. Summer is coming.
I'm writing a book. my book that I've been writing for years. When somebody writes us a review, I'll start it.
Ooh.
Oh, so not only do you get a shirt, but I'll start playing that game.
Bring it on, motherfucker.
I'm going to hate you, John, if you write that review. Now you need to play it.
I can create a fake account.
It does not count. A no from your grammar.
Yeah. That's a really freaking awesome game. So anyways, that's our little rage of two middle-aged men. Nah, it's not a middle-aged man. We're getting there.
We're getting. Well, one of us is 30.
So, yeah, just. I guess because we grew up with. Remember those times that you just bought the game, get it home, put it in.
That was it.
And start playing. No downloads, no time, no. Just put it in.
I hate the downloads.
Now it's like, all right, I'm here. I'm going to wait 2 hours for download again.
Right. Nobody use the internet. It's downloading.
Yeah, exactly. Please, nobody Netflix, no nothing.
My wife checks her Instagram and I see my thing pause and I'm like, stop. You're anchoring it.
The only kind of good thing now, it's like you can put them in standby and they, you know, overnight
download. Yeah. So that's, completely.
That's so great, but still, like, when you're like, God damn it, I want to play it right now. Why not?
Just so we can copy it onto your Xbox.
Yeah, exactly. Not even install it. Just copy it.
Yeah.
Well, people, that's our number 20 episode this week. Oh,
a little bit
of everything.
I love it.
I think next episode is going to be a little bit of, well, yeah, May is coming. So May movies and games coming on May.
Yep, yep.
And maybe we talk a little bit of that teaser of Star Wars.
Star Wars. The I'm Last happy.
I'm
Jedi.
Happy that they're coming. Like you say, it's not impressive. I agree on it.
Yeah.
But kind of like The Force Awakens was really great. So now I'm invested on the story. So
I keep hearing that they're going to. You know, I'm going to save it. I'm sorry, guys. That's episode 21 talk. I can't do it yet.
Just go ahead.
I'm just going to say they keep saying that it's going to answer a lot of questions because that was my big gripe at a number seven. Force Awakens
it was expected.
Yeah, there's too many questions. You look at A New Hope, it answers everything. It could have been a standalone movie. Yeah.
True.
And
well, it's because it was thought about that way.
We have
this big ass franchise and we're going to make so many movies, you know? It was like, well, let's hope this works and let's see later.
Exactly. See what sticks. Yeah. No, and so that's, I guess, my biggest gripe on number seven is that it didn't answer anything. It felt like we moved an inch on the timeline and nothing was explained. It was just more for the spectacle. And so if this one delivers on answering some questions and delivering more than just nostalgia, I'll be in for it. But right now, as it stands, I'm super hesitant.
By the way, that new Battlefront game is
excited for that.
Great link between episode 6 and episode 7.
Which I'm all excited right in the middle, for.
Yeah.
And again, I guess it comes down to that type of media. I like being more interactive with it.
True.
So, but yeah, we'll talk about it more.
Next episode.
21.
21. You have any recommendation, Chris?
In the spirit of our coming-of-age movies.
There you go.
I'm going to recommend a movie that I'm going to see this week. It's going to be The Age of 17. The Edge of 17.
Edge of 17.
Edge of 17. It was a recent movie that came out, and it went by. I really wanted to see it when it was in theater. But financial strain and busy schedules prevented me from getting there. And I don't know. There's something about it. It's about a girl who is obviously trying to break out of her awkward love life. Her only friend just started dating her brother, her older brother, or her twin brother. Either way, he's super popular. She's not. So she feels now more alone than ever. And so she's trying to navigate what it's like to be an independent person, really find herself and not be attached or identify with her brother or her best friend. And to me, the way that it kind of dances around the dark comedy and still manages to keep things light makes me want to watch it even more because I enjoy things that are painful and hurtful to watch as long as it can, I don't know, have some brevity to it and have some ability to make light of certain stuff because nobody ever just is in pain all the time. So I don't know. True. Age of 17 is going to be my recommendation. I've loved everything I've seen about it. The reviews of it are fantastic. So that's what I will be seeing this week.
Sweet. That's all right.
What about you, Hugo?
I guess for a TV show, it's anime, but at this point in my life, I consider all those in one.
TV, anime, movies.
You know, it's meant to be to consume that way, you know.
Yeah, it's a type of, yeah.
So, it's that anime One Punch Man or something.
One Punch Man.
We watched one episode and I mean, I finished the whole thing, especially because like not even half, it's like 20 minutes episodes.
Yeah.
Freaking hilarious. Like, I was cracking up all the time. But also at the same time, it's like a mixture of the comedy of the animes with all the action scenes. like you can think of the best action scenes on anime. And
you know, you're right. It does all stuff. It does do that very well. The artistic styling and
it's just hilarious.
But it kind of plays. It's one of those films that kind of plays on the tropes of superhero genres or manga books and what you would think something would be like that on. And it kind of pokes holes in a bunch of their storylines and kind of with the character who literally kills anything in one punch.
I think that's the whole point of, you know, it's besides maybe Superman. All the other heroes struggle so much to accomplish everything they don't want. This guy, like you say, has a little power of boom, one punch and you're done. So imagine that, you know, like you're in a city full of monsters that they proclaim to be the best or like the deadliest one. And this guy is just one punch. And it's a sequence on one of the episodes, like he's kicking ass, but these monsters are resisting and they're putting him a battle. And he's all like freaking excited and pumped. And then the alarm, you know, goes.
It wakes him up.
Wake him up and like, ah, oh, come on.
And that's the whole, like, I guess, strain of it. It's not that he's ever in any danger. He's just looking for something to at least give him a challenge because he's so bored.
Yeah, exactly.
And it kind of sounds like it'd be like a one-off thing, but they do such a good job with the comedy and the timing that it's super enjoyable to watch.
Because, you know, you can turn like, yeah, whatever, this guy has the power to kick your ass in one punch and that's it, the whole thing. But it's just the mix of so many types of anime. And even it's not like he's not burnable. I'm waiting for season two. But it's a hint that maybe that slowly the more powerful, you know, challenges come later. But so far it's just like that. He's just one punch.
It's more situationally funny. And
just like the casual things, like he's going to the store for his breakfast like any other person, but this guy has the power to, you know, kill you in one punch.
Right. And then like everybody's evacuating the town and he's still just buying his food and cooking his meal.
And also like, you know, that superficial part, like I don't want to spoil, but it's going to be a little spoil, so it has more sense. During the series is like this organization of like almost like a Justice League but subscription based, like pay your fees and then they rank you for, you know, how cool
you
are.
So stupid.
But it's based on like these guys reports how many like cool things they did as superheroes, and then they add like how popular they are for people, like they, you know, send questions to people like, how you like this guy, how do you know? So it's so funny that his student is like almost at the top, and he's kind of like, let's say that the student is A+, and this guy, the one man
punch man,
it's like maybe C, kind of like right there. But this guy is clearly most powerful than everybody else, but he don't have the charisma and all that stuff. And he want that attention. Like he
does.
He's the one that like, oh, I want to be, you know.
Right. And I think that that's what makes it so funny is that duality of like, I want to be liked, but I also want to be challenged.
Yeah.
And he's just so bored with it all. And like, I love when anime kind of makes their more serious stuff a little bit more chibi, meaning like cute. Like, and his chibi form is just like this egg-headed bald man. It's just like a dot eyes, and he's just like, when really he looks like a normal person, but it's just to convey emotion. So his bored emotion is what he walks around with the most. It's so bad. He looks like a Humpty Dumpty most of the time. But who goes right? It's an even if you don't like anime, I have a hunch this one will kind of speak to you. Right. Even if you don't know a lot of the tropes, it's still really funny.
Yeah.
I like that recommendation.
So I think that's for the TV show. And for a movie, I just recently watched 10 Line Cloverfield. I like it until the whole alien thing come up. I feel like it was a little bit off.
But again, that's an anthology for his whole Cloverfield thing. So
yeah, but I mean, it wasn't that bad. But I was really super excited just to the part of John Goodman character, you know, being insane and all this stuff.
Yeah, the acting in it was superb.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it didn't work for me, the alien thing, which I was expecting that, you know. It's the name there, Cloverfield, but
It totally terrified me completely. As anybody now knows, you want my weak spot, there it is. I've had so many dreams of that scene where she comes out of the cellar and she's like panicking and and the film isn't quite focused at it, but you can kind of see something fuzzy moving back there. And when she does look at it, and then it makes that noise and it sees her and it starts rocketing towards her.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope. Just kill me right then. And I will lay down on the ground and just die. I've had so many dreams. We were up in with her dad, my father-in-law, when we were watching that one. And I was just like, I can't back out now.
Yeah, exactly. Like, okay, you need to suck it up. But yeah, I mean, it was a cool one. Maybe for you works the alien part. But so far for me, it was everything. It was amazing.
Up until that point?
Yeah, until they, you know.
But I had heard that movie was itself just that cellar part, and she gets out and stuff and had a completely different ending. And then when J.J. Abrams kind of got a hold of it, he changed a few things, had them do a bunch of reshoots, and then shot that whole last scene to change it to fit his. Hmm. It's been on the shelf for years. So I think that the reason you do like that cellar part is because it can stand on its own without the M. Night Shyamalan-like twist of Aliens.
Kind
of
thing, yeah. But there you go. Those are my two recommendations for games. I've been recently playing FIFA, I know. It's a little bit lame, or, well, a lot of lame. But I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm Mexican. You know, foot soccer is big in there. And in a way, it's kind of, okay. But the thing is, FIFA, I can play it a little bit, and then I'm out. If I play something more deeper, I need tons of time. So I'm trying to choose a time
where it's a good casual game.
Yeah, I need a time to really savor it, a good game. So that's the reason. You can, you know, go to Facebook and shoot me about, you know, me playing, you know, FIFA. So, whatever. So that's it for this episode, Chris.
That's it.
I guess have a lot of sex.
Halos.
Please don't mix consoles and sex. That's not hygienic.
You know what? Somebody has. Mixing it, but. Somebody used one of the... This is horrible. I'm sorry. I have to do this.
See, normally I'm the guy going over the top. Chris times.
I'll dunk it this time. So back when the PlayStation first came out, they had the camera called the Playroom to watch you and you could play, but you could broadcast for people to watch. There was this couple that just was naked and they would just play naked and broadcast themselves. So Sony had to shut the whole thing down. They're like, well, that way. This is why we can't have nice things. That's our hashtag. This is why we can't have nice things.
There you go, people. So... And I guess the remotes can be used as a vibrator. So I don't know. I'm not
the light up ones.
That's it. I'm not gonna try to give ideas to people out there. So have a great week and adios, people.